only laid by a store when we had a specific goal in mind. And would that relieve us of the responsibility to lay by a store once we have eliminated ourselves of all future goals?
Can we lay by in store as we have been prospered, and also lay by in store only as we see a need that needs to be met? Are those two things parallel? They aren't always, are they? Sometimes we may not have do not know of a specific need at a particular time, and yet there is still the need to lay by in store, isn't there? Okay, Ann?
You have to save when you have something to save in the first place. And you spend when you have a reason to spend. So you can't always contemplate all the things that are ahead. So therefore, you have to have some means of getting ahead in order to have that when the time comes. But you still have a pattern to go by laying by in store every first day of the week. There's that pattern as well as having goals.
That's right. I think we definitely need to realize that laying by in store, as we have been prospered, is for the purpose of meeting needs, but it's also for the purpose of us understanding what we have and how we're going to utilize what we have and that which we get. So I would have, I guess, some problems in accumulation just for the sake of accumulation. Janice is wanting to say something.
There's nothing wrong when you've met your financial needs, creating some of your own. Perhaps there's an elder that would be willing to give up his job if he could get support from the church, or maybe there's a young man who's willing to go into church work, or one who already has but needs more support. The church should be, when they're able to, when they have enough for their own needs, look out for the needs of others. Make an active effort, not just wait till they hear, well, so-and-so needs something.
Well, is the problem really a lack of need anyway? Not really, is it? Maybe there is a lack of our being able to see needs that exist at times, but as far as there being a need for the Lord's work, certainly it's there far greater than what I'm sure that we'll ever meet. I wanted to look at just another aspect of giving. Is it necessary, or is the passing of the basket from hand to hand, is this something that needs to be done, or would a collection point when the saints meet be more reasonable from the standpoint of sometimes do we impose an undue obligation upon those that are visiting by passing the basket from hand to hand? And do we maybe place an undue obligation upon those that do not have to give by doing so? Is there a better method than we do it? Or is the method that we are now practicing one which most adequately meets need? Kimber? I'm wondering how many here feel that it is just absolutely necessary that the basket must be passed from hand to hand, because maybe we've developed that idea because that's the way we've always done it and that's the way we ought to do it. Kurt?
If we feel comfortable with it, it should be all right as long as we're giving.
Okay. Michael?
You can't hear the comments.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Kimber mentioned that they have just a box in the back there at Alton, and it's mentioned at, when did you say it?
Right after the Lord's
table. It's mentioned that the box is there, and as people pass by it, if they desire to place something there, they do. Does it create a problem for anyone, one way or another? I know that it is practiced that way in more than one place in the brotherhood. Yes?
There, since you asked if there was a problem, I think that there have been people, perhaps older people or someone, that would forget to put theirs in because they got busy afterwards or various things, especially with a larger congregation. It could get to be confusing or hard for them to do this. And it's a matter of convenience when it's passed by and you're in that position, you can give or not give. It's up to you anyway.
Okay, I think sometimes we create a circumstance, especially with visitors, that makes them very uncomfortable. I don't know whether this would be reason enough or not to refrain from passing the basket, but there'll be times when they really don't understand what's going on, and all at once you'll find people fumbling through and trying to come up with something, and you've got a question as to whether someone's really laying by in store or has given much thought to what they were doing in this type of circumstance. Steve?
I'm a younger person, and I have forgotten myself having the box in the back, because it's a lot easier to forget because you're not reminded by the passing of the plate or the basket. However, I find for myself there's a lot more thought put into it by putting it in the box in the back than there is in having it come to the thing that's passed in front of you, and then, like you say, a lot of times you humble, and especially guests have to go through this, and I think this is very embarrassing sometimes, and I really do wonder about the motives for their giving.
Well, I'm going to take about one more, and then I'm going
to
move on.
We went to a congregation just recently who had a box in the back. They forgot to tell us. They didn't tell us at all about it. So we had to ask what we were doing.
Now, so there's all kinds of circumstances that are going to arise, aren't there?
I was wondering
about
the money for a school, or the purpose on the
bottom. Oh boy, that's opening up.
Good question.
The question was, what about saving up for a specific purpose, or what even about the borrowing? Okay, whether to save it or borrow money and go ahead and do it. Oh, I don't know whether I want to touch that one or not. At least the thought's been put out for you to think about. I'm going to leave it right there. I want to go on. Let's go to our singing service. And I'm not going to deal a great deal with this, not because I think it's not important, Michael. But I think there are some things that we really need to look at, and I'm sure that Brother Manning could bring out some things that would be very beneficial for us from the standpoint of the early church and their practice. But let's look at it basically from just the basic idea of singing within the service, and of course we're going to look at Ephesians 5:19 and Colossians 3:16. First of all, I think it's rather interesting that the statement was made that was to the Ephesian brethren. This was probably the center of idolatry at that time, where there were many pagan festivals, and certainly music was in abundance. So this may very well give us some thought as to why the statement was made to the Ephesians, aside from the fact that certainly we need the information today. But as we look at Ephesians 5:19, it mentions concerning speaking to ourselves. I want to turn to that particular verse. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your hearts to the Lord. And I'm sure that all of us at times have wondered about the psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. I want to look in particular at the first part of that, of speaking to yourselves. I have a particular thought in this verse, and I guess whoever designed the public meeting houses, I don't feel really had the song service too much in mind. Speaking means to speak or converse with, or this is words that are uttered by the mouth. And if I would turn around and deliver my discourse to you today, I wonder how interesting it would be to you. And yet when we sing to the back of one another's heads, don't we? And yet it says speaking to yourselves, and yourselves means mutually or one to another. And I believe that as we look at what the song service was designed to do, as he talks with these Ephesian brethren, he wanted that part of their service to be a communication between one another. And it's pretty difficult to communicate without eye contact effectively. Now, if when I talk to you, and you're standing over here, and I stand looking in the other direction, you probably think that I'm not too sure of what I'm saying, or I'm really not too interested in you. And I think so that if we could, I'm not sure just exactly what design I would like to see, but I think a semicircle would certainly create a better atmosphere where we could see what each other is feeling in that song. And we would truly then, I believe, be communicating rather than communicating with the page on our song book, which many of us have our face buried in it anyway. But we are to be communicating with one another with words, mutually. Now, does this say that we are all going to be singing together at the same time? I don't think that it necessarily means that. I think Michael went into that yesterday and to some degree, and we have to look very carefully at the Scripture if we're going to make the statement that we must all be singing at the same time. As a matter of fact, as we look at psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, the Psalms was probably a pious song, a psalm of David. They were of Hebrew origin. Some of us, or we have in our books some songs today that were taken from the Psalms and would have been very similar to this. I really feel their singing was probably more of the chanting variety than the type of singing that we know today. Hymns were probably more of Greek origin. They are a song in praise of God or a sacred song, as we find it mentioned here. But we find that the Greeks were very familiar with the hymns of praise that were sung to their gods or their heroes. And this was a type of singing that they were very familiar with and were comfortable with. So probably there were more hymns sung among the Gentile people and more psalms, at least initially, among the Jewish people. Spiritual songs, with spiritual being a qualifying adjective, then spiritual are acts of a life dedicated to God, and songs were those that were composed by spiritual men and were about spiritual things. Harmony and singing did not begin until probably after 1000 A.D., so the type of singing that we know today is very vastly different, but the type of singing I don't think is the thing that we're really as concerned about as we are the content of that, which is contained within the songs, and that we be able to teach one another in the songs that we do sing. We have up there then the Colossians 3:16 reference, where you can see there from that scripture that the imparting of instruction to instill doctrine into one. The singing service is not a filler. It is not something that breaks up the rest of the service. It has as much import as anything else. It's to be instructive. It's to be uplifting. It's one that music seems to be something that touches almost everyone's soul in at least some way. Many times it's a way of reaching people that cannot be reached in any other way. Because if we are very expressive in our singing, it is indeed very effective. Do want to look at 1 Corinthians 14 and 15 because of the misuse of that scripture on some occasion. Remember in chapter 14, he's dealing with the proper use of spiritual gifts and the fact that everything that is done is to be done to the edifying of the church. We'll just read this verse to remind you of what it says. It says, "What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit, and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the understanding also." Many occasions you might hear people say that not only are we to sing in the Spirit, but we're to understand what we're singing and pay attention to what we're singing. Well, whereas that is true, and it is brought out in both of these references, that is not what he's referring to. When we sing in the Spirit, it is with the mind. It is something that we give thought to, but what he's really interested in here is their singing in a language in which people could understand. Not that as I sing that I might understand, but that I sing so that those that are singing with me or hear me. In this case, it was probably those who had been endowed with the spiritual gifts of being able to sing and teach singing to these people, that they would sing in such a manner that those hearing could understand, not just try to impress people because they could sing in a different language. So the understanding was not upon the part of the individual that was doing the singing, but upon the part of those that were hearing. Richard?
There's been some thought along this same line where we are here. There's been some thought that spiritual songs may have been songs that were inspired by the Spirit. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, I would certainly... the only comment that I would make is I would think that... yes, indeed, they would be, that the church might understand and know the type of singing that the Lord wanted. I don't think he left us without any guidance in any area as far as the church was concerned.
Well, then in 1 Corinthians 14, we may have been talking about the spiritual
song. May have been talking about the individual who was inspired with song to teach the brethren. No one is able to understand, then certainly the context of this chapter is let everything be done to edifying. If no one can understand, how can they be edified? So that there is one criteria for our singing. It is that it is to be edifying. So those of you who lead songs, you need to give serious consideration to what you're doing. You're leading the group in edification. And your song service should be developed so that that is accomplished. Marvin?
I have the liberty then, if I feel that a certain way of handling a song, whether it's solo or whether it's by combination of voices, if it brings an edifying, more edifying than what we all sang, that I have that liberty?
I am just going to say that whatever you do is to be to the edifying of the church.
I know
what you're saying.
We seem to be married to choral singing, like
right.
Michael has been conducting. And I feel that we miss out on a great deal because we are married to that. It seems we can't get divorced from it. We condemn, verbally at least, the denominations for using a choir, but I wonder if they don't have as much ammunition to shoot back at us, if you want to say it that way, in our insistence that everybody sing.
Well, I think the reason we are more comfortable in the choral situation is because it imposes more obligation upon us to make certain that our purposes and our motives are correct in whatever type of singing that we do. Whenever we get it out of the choral situation, we always create the opportunity for someone to develop maybe an ego that they have. And we're more comfortable in the choral situation.
I was going to say, I can hide easier in the choral situation.
Yeah. But I wrestled with this, wrestled with it to a great degree, and I tried diligently to prove that we must all sing in a choral arrangement, and I come to the conclusion that I could not say that I could not make that statement. The only statement that I can accurately make and know and feel confident of is that the singing is to be done to the edifying of the body.
Well, in the Corinthian letter where he says every one of you hath a psalm, what do you think that meant?
I won't comment on that now, and hopefully when we deal with mutual edification next week, we can... don't let me forget it. I know you won't.
I don't mean to say that it's wrong to sing a solo. The proposition you have to watch in is, first thing you know, it becomes entertaining.
That's right. It's it makes more of imposes more of an obligation upon us, and there's no question about it. Jay had his. Didn't you have your hand up, Jay?
Yeah, just real quickly here. You made the comment that we didn't sing tunes until about 1000 A.D.
Harmony.
Harmony. I think most everybody in here agrees that one of the reasons where we do not have musical instruments is because it takes away from the song. It takes our mind away from it. Could the same thing be said about the harmony?
It never has done that with me that I know.
Just
Tom?
I had something to say besides that. If anybody else wants to comment on that.
You want to comment on what?
I just want to say one thing about that. I think that the harmony, what you were speaking of, you were talking about having it put into arrangements. Is this what you're saying? Or
like four-part or two-part, whatever.
So that everyone knows their part and it's arranged that way. That's what you're talking about. Don't you think that... harmony is something that occurs in music when people are singing together in a group situation. This is going to occur regardless of whether or not it's written out. I mean, this is sort of a natural outpouring, isn't it?
You're talking about not harmony from the standpoint of four parts, but rather from the standpoint of the blending of the voices together. Am I understanding you correctly?
That's more the direction that I'm going. Yeah, what I mean is... there's different voices that we all have, and we make different sounds, and you blend these voices together. If you're singing in a group situation, you wouldn't necessarily have to have it written out so that the basses know their part, the tenors know their part, and so on. But if you just throw a group of people together and they start singing together, well, they're going to have different voices that are going to blend in together. This would be qualified as harmony.
Now, I know some of the songs that Thomas sings with us that we don't have the written music out in front of us, and yet as we sing some of those songs, I like to harmonize because music is an important part of my life and it's something that I enjoy and I feel like doing, and it's expression of that I hope at least comes from my heart. And I think that's probably how these different forms of singing develop is... we've got one over here, and that's the last one I'm going to take on singing. I'm sorry to have to do it that way, but we do.
I think Marvin has a good point, and I understand what is being said about wouldn't want somebody to do this to develop their own ego or something like that. But, you know, a preacher can do that, too. He can preach to develop his own ego.
Oh, sure.
When I've heard Marvin use the solo, I've always appreciated it. I have been edified by his use of it, because I know he's not doing it to entertain.
Okay. Think about it. I want to look at one other thing in connection with singing in James 5 and 13 from an individual standpoint. that's the scripture. It says, is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing songs. To be merry means of good cheer, or you'll hear people going around humming a tune, singing, and this type of thing. But we need to understand also that sometimes people don't feel like singing. And I think not only could this be true from an individual standpoint, but talking in our discussion groups yesterday, as far as depression and trying to understand one another and this type of thing, we need to understand that we don't always feel like singing. I want to look at Psalms 137, the first four verses. It says, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? They didn't feel comfortable. They didn't feel like singing there. So they didn't. Or at least it was required of them. Said, how can we possibly do this? So I think we need to be understanding of one another and understand that sometimes we don't feel like singing. And I think sometimes this helps us to understand what's going on in one another's lives. Also in Proverbs 25 and 20, very much along the same line, as he that taketh away a garment in cold weather, and as vinegar upon nitre, so is he that singeth a song to a heavy heart. I think this shows that an open sharing of our lives, not only in the assembly but at all times, and that even in our song service, it should be such that we can be of help to one another and be a strength to one another. And I think another point that we need to make, I want you to listen carefully. The songs on our lips indicate where our heart is. The songs on our lips indicate where our heart is. Yeah, we've only got... Yes.
Maybe my thinking is a little bit strange, but it's hard for me to think of any occasion where people can't sing.
But David said they didn't feel like singing.
Well, they didn't feel like singing a song of joy in that one. But look at the psalm. When David was most grief-stricken, to me I think it's singing almost like prayer. You're never too sad to pray. You're not going to sing joyful songs when your heart's heavy. But that's one of the times I want to sing to the Lord. When things are in their darkest hour, it's not going to be the same type of singing. But to me, singing is almost like prayer. You can express yourself in all directions with it.
That's true, but we still need to understand that not everyone feels that way, and not everyone feels like singing.
Sing alone with tears streaming down your cheeks?
Often. I'll sing because I'm alone a lot.
And not necessarily a song you've learned, just a song that pours out your heart, your own words. Maybe other people don't do that.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Thomas.
There's times when I feel so bad that I cannot carry it through. If I want to sing, I cannot carry it through. And I know that other people can hear me make mistakes.
Does it matter whether you can carry a tune or not, Dan?
Yes. Paul and Silas, after we've been beaten, prayed and sang in prison. And if anybody had any reason not to be very quick about it, they were hurt physically, hurt.
I'm not talking about public singing as much as I am private singing.
Right.
To me, it's almost like prayer.
But doesn't our singing indicate really where we are at that time?
Definitely.
And that's the point I think we need to understand is where we are, and as we look at one another in relationship to where we are, how we can meet one another's needs. One more. If we see people that are not singing for an extended period of time, then I think we need to see what we can do for them. Time's up.